From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. For millions of Americans now, small town life is something deep in the rearview mirror. If they knew it, they've left it. Rod Dreher left it, lived all over, big city journalist, then went back when his sister Ruthie got sick in their hometown, small town in rural Louisiana. And now he's just plain moved back. Thomas Wolfe said you can't go home again. Rod Dreher's doing it, drawn by family, history, tradition, community. He's with us this hour on Point, the small town life in America now. And Rod Dreher's story, you can join us or on air or online where this conversation never ends. Have you left? Have you stayed? Have you gone back? How do you think about small town life now? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New Orleans, Louisiana, is Rod Dreher, longtime columnist, now senior editor at the American Conservative. He's been at the Dallas Morning News, the New York Post, the South Florida Sun Sentinel, and more. He's author of the new book, The Little Way of Ruthie Lemming, A Southern Girl, A Small Town, and The Secret of a Good Life. You can find an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Rod Dreher, welcome to On Point. Wonderful to have you here.
Hey, Tom. Thanks so much for having me on.
We're going to meet your sister through the pages of this book and a lot of your family. But introduce us to your hometown, Rod. Where is it? What's it like?
I'm from a small town in southern Louisiana called St. Francisville. Truth to tell, I'm actually from a little settlement 6 miles south of St. Francisville called Star Hill. But for all intents and purposes, St. Francisville is my hometown. It's right in the middle of plantation country on the Mississippi River, about half an hour north of Baton Rouge. And it's got only 1,700 people in it.
It is a river town. And it's where you grew up, and it's where you and your sister, your younger sister, Ruthie, parted ways pretty early. She settled in to make this her hometown for life. You headed off before you were even out of high school to a magnet school in Natchitoches.
That's right, in Natchitoches, Louisiana. I could not wait to get out of Star Hill. I was the city mouse from the word go. My sister was the country mouse. I can remember well being in high school, lying in my bedroom at my mom and dad's house, listening to new wave music and wishing I was in London. And Ruthie was probably the most contented person I've ever known. She loved the woods. She loved fishing. She loved her boyfriend, her high school sweetheart, who later became her husband. And we were night and day, and I left as soon as I could.
You tell an incredibly affecting story of the tension between your sister who had stayed there and you who were moving from one big city to another over the course of a career in journalism, tension there about which was the better way, and then the moving story of Ruthie when lung cancer comes to her and your hometown comes out for her in a way that just kind of dropped you to your knees, Rod. What happened?
Absolutely. Ruthie was a very healthy person, athletic. She never smoked. She did everything right, so to speak. Yet at the age of 40, she started coughing, and the cough never went away. She went in for an operation, and they found lung cancer, and it had already spread all over her body. And it was a fatal diagnosis, barring some sort of miracle. I was living in Philadelphia at the time of her diagnosis and got on a plane and got down to Baton Rouge as fast as I could. And I went into the hospital, and Ruthie was an absolute rock. She was so serene and tranquil, and she was holding everybody together. But the whole town of St. Francisville and West Feliciana Parish, as you know, in Louisiana, we have parishes, not counties, they came out for Ruthie and her husband, Mike, the girls, for my mom and dad, in a way that just took my breath away. And I was able to see that all the investment that Ruthie had made over the course of her lifetime in this parish, in this community. She taught middle school there and taught most of the kids in town at some point. It really paid off because she had such a deep community and a deep bench of people to love her and help carry them.
A deep bench. And it came to the fore when she was in trouble and moved her brother so much that after all your years away, you moved back. I wonder if you'd read a little bit for us, Rod, from the book. There's a passage after we learn this story, a very affecting story, where you're meditating on you and millions of other Americans who have moved away from small towns
sort of stereotypes people may have about small town life and something about what you learned. Could you read a bit for us?
Sure. Those of us who have moved away are not necessarily callow and ungrateful people. We live in a time and place in which we are conditioned to leave our hometowns. Our schools tell our young people to follow their professional bliss wherever it takes them. Our economy rewards companies and people who have no loyalty to place. The stories that shape the moral imagination of our young, chiefly by film and television, are told by outsiders who are dissatisfied and lit out for elsewhere to find happiness and good fortune. During the decade leading up to Ruthie's death, I had spent my professional life writing newspaper columns, blog posts, and even a book lamenting the loss of community and traditions in American life. I had a reputation as a pop theoretician of cultural decline, but in truth, I was long on words, short on deeds. I did not like the fact that I saw my Louisiana family only three times a year, for a week at a time, if we were lucky. But that was the way of the world, right? Almost everyone I knew was in the same position. My friends and I talked a lot about the fragmentation of the modern family, about the deracinating effects of late capitalism, about mass media and the erosion of localist consciousness, about the consumerization of religion and the Leviathan state and every other thing under the sun that undermines our sense of home and permanence. The one thing none of us did was what Ruthie did: stay. Contemporary culture encourages us to make islands of ourselves for the sake of self-fulfillment, of career advancement, of entertainment, of diversion, and all the demands of the sovereign self. When suffering and death come for you, and it will, you want to be in a place where you know and are known. You want, no, you need to be able to say, as Ruthie's husband Mike did, "We're leaning, but we're leaning on each other."
Rod Dreher in New Orleans reading there from his book, The Little Way of Ruthie Lemming, a southern girl, a small town, and the secret of a good life. Man, for that feeling to come at you so hard that it took you back was a very big deal. I mean, to leave this sort of series of big city appointments that you had and go back to the hometown. Did it fulfill? Has it fulfilled? Is it really there in such a different way from the networks and communities and roots that people put together in cities?
Well, I wouldn't say that the people in St. Francisville are necessarily more moral people or better people than folks anywhere else. But in my case, I had moved around so much over the years after I left Louisiana that I never stayed in one place long enough to put down those roots. And that's what I really observed when throughout Ruthie's illness, that because she had stayed in place, because she had tended her garden, so to speak, and had not uprooted herself and her family and moved around for jobs, she could count on that. If we, my wife and I thought, if living in Philadelphia, we had just been there maybe a month when Ruthie was diagnosed, if that happened to one of us out of the blue, what would we do? We were making friends in Philly, but we hadn't been there that long, and it would take a long time to build that social network that we that Ruthie could count on just as her inheritance. And I tell you, Tom, when I went down for her funeral, we were standing outside the little Methodist church in St. Francisville, and there were over 1,000 people there at that wake. And I had this epiphany. I said that, you know, this is what it means. This is what life really means. And all the things that had held me down and held me back when I was a teenager, that was what was holding my family together during this crisis. And my wife and I felt we want to be part of this. We need to be part of this, whatever it cost us. We're coming home.
All the things that held you down and held you back, what do you mean by that? Family, tradition, history, the very things that were...
Family, tradition, the communal norms. As I write in the book, I was an outsider as a teenager. I was a book nerd. And when you're in a small town growing up in the 70s and 80s, if in a small southern town at least, if you're not into athletics, if you're not into hunting and fishing, and I wasn't, you're really an outsider. And I got picked on in high school, and that was the thing that made me want to leave more than anything else, was to get away from the bullying and the sense of being an outsider. And what I discovered, though, was the same thing that made people harsh to outsiders, you know, those strong sense of community traditions and loyalties, those in a different context and years later was what sustained my family. And it's not that I realized at the age of 45 that I had been wrong to run away from the oppression. That's kind of a histrionic word, but I had not been wrong to run away from that. But it was not the case that that was all there was there. Mm-hmm. I was able to see through Ruthie's suffering and the way the town responded to her that there's a lot more to community, to these tightly knit communities, than I thought when I left.
Thomas Wolfe wrote famously, "You can't go home again." Are you disproving that? Do you know yet? Is it still an experiment, Rod?
Well, I hope it's not an experiment. I don't want to move again. I want to be there. But it's true you can't go home again in a nostalgic sense. People change. I changed. The town changed. But you can go home again if you have different expectations of it. And I think I do.
Got nothing against the big town. Still hayseed enough to say, look who's in the big town. But my bed is in a small town. Oh, that's good enough for me. Well, I was born in a small town, and I can breathe in a small town. Gonna die in a small town. Oh, that probably will bury me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American small town life, moving out, going back, what's gained, what's lost, what's going on in small town USA these days. Rod Dreher joins us from New Orleans, longtime journalist, commentator, senior editor at the American Conservative, and author of the new book, The Little Way of Ruthie Lemming, A Southern Girl, A Small Town, and The Secret of a Good Life. His sister stayed in their small town in rural Louisiana. He went all over. She got cancer when it caught up with her in the most serious possible way. That town was there for them in a huge way, and it brought him back home. He writes in the book, no scales on his eyes here. He says, "I knew St. Francisville's shortcomings." He writes, "There's poverty, there's brokenness, there's drunkenness, there are drugs. There's meanness and conformity and a lack of professional opportunity. Of all the things that made me run away from this place," Rod Dreher writes, "nearly three decades ago, most of them remain. But Ruthie, his sister, who died of that cancer, transfigured this town in my eyes," he writes. "Her suffering and death made me see the good that I couldn't see before. The same communal bonds that appeared to me as chains all those years ago had become my Louisiana family's lifelines. What I once saw through the melodramatic eyes of a teenager as prison bars," Rod Dreher writes, "were in fact the pillars that held my family up when it had no strength left to stand." He has moved back home. Could you do it? Let's go to Ellen, calling from Virginia Beach, Virginia. Ellen, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Rod Dreher.
Hi, Viv. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Great. I'm calling because I want to say this is so refreshing to hear. I, too, am from a small town, kind of an outsider, kind of a book nerd. I had to go all the way to Annapolis, Maryland before I finally fit in somewhere. Ended up with a guy from Chicago. And we live in Virginia, and we're actually going home to see our family, like you said, maybe three times a year if we're lucky.
Where is your hometown, Ellen? Where is that hometown that you left?
I'm from Amy, Louisiana. It's up there by Hammond, around Franklinton. I grew up on Highway 1054.
Okay, and Annapolis, meaning the U.S. Navy? You went off to the Navy to get away? Is that the...
I went to the Naval Academy and have henceforth seen... I wouldn't call West and East Africa and the Middle East exotic, but Central and South America, Europe.
Seen the world.
Just been around.
So can you imagine going back like Rod Dreher? It's almost your story.
I can't. It's not that the people aren't nice, but in my honest experience, I always find that I have nothing to say. I mean, the things that are so revolutionary and just gossipy, it just seems rather trite to me at this point. And the only reason that I go back is to see my parents.
Rod, what do you say? Ellen's not going home. You've done it. Maybe there's no one way here. There's no one path, but you can hear her resistance, Rod.
Sure, and I understand that resistance very much. I don't hold out my path as a path for everybody. There's a reason people leave, and there's a reason some people have the opportunity to come back. In my case, I'm from a nice town. I have lots of family roots there. And I was able to see the town and the town's people and the opportunities there with new eyes. I'm a writer. And one of my favorite things that the late novelist Walker Percy said in one of his books is, nowadays, if you're a writer, do you want to be stumbling around Greenwich Village, booze to the gills, or do you want to be sitting on your front porch in Knoxville, Tennessee? Well, I sit on my front porch in St. Francisville, Louisiana, and I notice my community, and I notice things that I couldn't see before. And I'm drawn into the life of the community in a way that I didn't think was possible. And, you know, standing at Ruthie's wake, as I mentioned earlier, people would come up to me and they would say, sir, you don't know me, but she taught me, and here's what she did for me. I was able to see through the eyes of these other people who had been students and colleagues of my sister's the powerful difference one can make in a small community. She had such an anonymous life, but she made all the difference for so many kids who didn't have much of anything. I always knew she was good, but I didn't know until that night that she was great, and that greatness can belong to anybody.
Anonymous life maybe on the world stage, but anything but anonymous in her hometown. When you came back to the city, you were living in Philadelphia, and said to your Philadelphia friends, you know, we're moving back to the little hometown, you write that you had expected a lot of Green Acres jokes and bourgeois bohemian ribbing about how hard it would be to live in a town without Thai restaurants and organic market. What did you actually find from your city friends?
Oh, Tom, it was astonishing. I found so much emotion in their reaction. And it wasn't just that they were going to miss us. It was envy. One woman I talked to has a very powerful position, very successful in her job. She had tears in her eyes and said, I envy you so much. I wish I had a place like that to go back to. But we moved all around the country, and our parents raised us to always go for the big job and go for the money. And now me and my sisters are totally separated. We have no home to go to. You get to avoid that, and I really wish I were in your position.
But surely people can also build community and put down roots in cities. I mean, you moved around a lot. That makes it a little tougher, I suppose. But surely you don't have to be in a town of 1,000 to have a rich life.
No. You're absolutely right. In fact, I think back to the time that my wife and I lived in Brooklyn. And that was a little village right there. If we had stayed there and had gotten involved in the community, that would have been our hometown. But we never did. We were always looking at life as consumers, as what can we extract from this place. And every single place we lived, we could have made it our community if we had just resolved to stay there, put roots down, and get involved in the community. That's one lesson I want people to take away from the book, Tom, is you don't have to have a small town to move back to, but you do need to commit yourself to putting down roots.
You quote Wendell Berry, the great agrarian essayist here, writing, when a community loses its memory or doesn't make one, its members no longer know one another. How can they know one another if they've forgotten or have never learned one another's stories? If they do not know one another's stories, how can they know whether or not to trust one another? Tammy in Rolet, Pennsylvania. Tammy, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Rod Dreher.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I recently did something like this last fall. I grew up in a very small town. I'm thinking there might have been around 500 people at the time. Moved away. I eventually ended up in New York State, which we're right on the border of anyway, but I never would have thought that I would move back there. There's the same kind of story. It's just, there's like one convenience store, no traffic lights, no real jobs or anything like that. But my grandmother actually needed someone to help take care of her, and I really didn't have any reason to not go back. So I still travel into New York to work every day, but I am really loving it. I never thought that I would love it as much as I have. It's just, I've actually found out a lot more information from her about our family that I never knew. I come home at night, and we planted a garden. I see, like, deer out in the backyard, like rabbits, the stars, a lot more than I've seen in a long time. It's just been an absolute blessing. It's like I'm so glad that I went back.
It's working for you, Tammy, and your grandmother, and I'm glad to hear that. But I wonder what people may miss as well, but clearly it's working right there for you. Let me get one more here. Tammy, I thank you for that. Harry in Springfield, Kentucky. Harry, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just want to ask your your guest, when he moved back to this small town in Louisiana. I live in a small town myself, and I don't know, one of the obstacles that I've run into is I'm also a professor, and how do you, if you've experienced this, how do you encourage the small-town people, and this isn't just characteristic of small-town people, but how do you encourage them that I feel a little bit out of place sometime, some of the things that I like to talk about, books, things other than little kids, books, serious topics, how do you fit in, you know, especially since you've had the big city experience, how do you fit in with that as far as a small town life is concerned?
Yeah. Rod, what do you say?
Oh, that's a great question. And it's one of the great fears I had before we moved back, that I would be lonely. I wouldn't have anyone to talk to, because my sister Ruthie certainly didn't share my intellectual interest. In fact, she held them against me. But Dr. Tim Lindsay, who's one of the heroes of the book, my sister's doctor, said, Rod, this town has changed a lot in 30 years. There are a lot more different people around here who have moved in, and you'll find your place. And he was absolutely right. It turns out that there are a lot of people in town who like books and ideas and who like the arts, and we're building a community there. In fact, I'm in New Orleans today in part to see people at Loyola University at the Walker Percy Center who are helping us start a Walker Percy Literary Festival in St. Francisville. So there are all these wonderful opportunities there that you just needed someone to take initiative and bring people together who do love books and ideas. I've been very lucky to find that.
And yet, there's a tension that never ends here. I mean, I've seen you in other writing and quoting others describing economic troubles in your small town. Of course, many others around the country. You know, the health and wholeness of small towns themselves is by no means guaranteed. And after, you know, reading about your return, it was kind of stunning to me to then read in your book your own father saying, you know, he says that one of his biggest regrets is that your father and mother, who lived there all their lives, said he regrets that he didn't himself leave. He says, we should have left this place. Your mother and I, we should have packed up and left here.
Wasn't that astonishing? My dad said that to me on the back porch after Sunday dinner one day, and it was probably the most incredible thing he's ever said to me in his life, because my dad was just this icon of family and place and devotion to family and place. I say that he and my sister, who was just like him, were Bayou Confucians. They thought the thing to do is to find your place and stay there and do your duty.
Yeah.
Now, at the very end of his long life, my dad, in thinking about the way he came home to serve his broader family, and they betrayed him in many ways.
Worked him like really a dog, suffered. never gave him a moment's thanks, you write?
Exactly. And here he is at the end of his life wondering if he should have left. What that told me, Tom, is that we can never be absolutely sure that we've made the right call. We can just do the best we can with what we're given. And even at the end of his life, my dad is not sure. But I tell you, the fact that he was able to admit that to me as someone, his son, who had been laden with guilt all his life for having left the family and left the place, that was such a healing moment. And as my wife said, that wouldn't have happened if we hadn't been home. Because my dad's an old country boy.
Sure.
You know, he can't get to the point on the telephone with his son in Philadelphia. But if I'm there every Sunday, sitting on the back porch, having normal conversation, he loosens up and these things come out.
Yeah. But when the ultimate thing is, after you've moved back, that he should have left when he was first married. Oh, boy. Rod Dreher's new book is The Little Way of Ruthie Lemming. Rod, stand by. I want to bring one more voice into our conversation, if I may. Thinking about small town life in this country, of course, a lot of people never had it in their background. And millions have left small towns over many decades now. I want to go to Whitewater, Wisconsin for a minute here. Kenneth Johnson joins us. He's professor of sociology, senior demographer at the University of New Hampshire's Carsey Institute. But with us from Whitewater, Wisconsin today, Ken Johnson, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
What do you think about this Rod Dreher's path here, moving back to his hometown, small town? Is he an outlier? Is there any move in that direction if you look at the big numbers here? Or is it all city-bound?
Well, certainly if you look at the data, the flows of population would generally be from the rural areas of the United States to the urban areas, but there are flows in each direction. And so over the long term, the rural parts of the United States have grown more slowly. So, for example, in 1980, there were almost 17,000 small towns in America. We still have 16,600, but they only contain about 15% of the U.S. population compared to 20% in 1980. So there has been, I would not say as much a decline in small towns as not any growth.
How do you define small town as a demographer, Ken?
Well, there are lots of different definitions. I was using under 10,000 as a, places of under 10,000 as sort of a definition of smaller towns. Now, obviously, you're talking about smaller places in the 1 to 2,000 range. The other important point is that there, in a rural part of the United States, there are many different things going on. So there are certainly in the rural farm areas, there are places that have gone from having 20,000 people at the turn of the 20th century to down to maybe 5 or 6,000
yeah.
now. On the other hand, there are, especially in recreational or retirement areas or just beyond the edges of the big cities, you have places that have grown quite dramatically, too. So, I mean, there's a lot of different trends that are flowing through what's happening in America.
And what about economically, culturally, what about the health and wholeness of small towns? I feel like I drive through small towns where they just look devastated in terms of, you know, the stores that are there, lots of things boarded up. By no means all, by no means. But, you know, Walmart and a lot of other things have gutted a lot of small towns, it looks to me.
Well, again, the striking thing to me as a demographer is the variability. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have some parts of rural America, like in the northern part of the Lower Peninsula of Michigan or in Wisconsin or in the Ozarks or in the Great Smokies, which have been growing like crazy. And the biggest problems in those small towns are how are we going to absorb all this growth that's coming to us?
Are these tourist destinations, retirement destinations?
Some of them are tourist retirement destinations. Grand Traverse County has a Traverse City as its city its county seat, and its population is about 15,000. And the area around it has grown quite a bit because it is a recreational area. But the important thing about recreational retirement areas is it's not just the retirees or the recreational people who come. It also creates opportunities for other people who might have had to leave these places otherwise, but now because there is some growth and there are people flowing in, there is opportunities for them as well.
Strangers used to stop and ask how far they'd driven off the map, and then they built that overpass, and now they stay out on the highway. Says plywood for glass, where the windows all got smashed, and there's just a chunk of concrete where those old pumps used to stand. There's a couple of cars half out of the ground, and that old sign still spins round and round. I guess the White Rose filling station's just a memory now.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American small town life, moving out, going back, what's gained, what's lost, what's going on in small town USA. Rod Dreher is with us from New Orleans, grew up nearer to Baton Rouge in Louisiana, and went away for a long time to a lot of cities, a lot of places. He's back now. He's written about it in his book, The Little Way of Ruthie Lemming. Ken Johnson is with us from Whitewater, Wisconsin today, professor of sociology, demographer at the University of New Hampshire's Carsey Institute. Rod, Ken, lots of people writing in here online on Facebook. Garrett writes, I finally went back to my hometown last weekend for my 10-year high school reunion. I felt like a stranger in a town I spent 18 years growing up in, quite an odd dreamlike feeling being in a familiar environment I do not know anymore. Christy says, left for 22 years to Big Lights, Bright City. Not for one moment does she regret going back to her small town roots. Laura, at 18, ran away as fast as she could for 20 years. Now, as an adult, she says she goes back every 4th of July and as often as she can to Comfort, Texas, small town founded by German freethinkers, still a bastion of cool people. It's interesting here for you, Rod. Coast writes to us, I don't have it in front of me right now. Oh, here we go. This is one complication when you go back to your small town roots. Folks you grew up with knew you in terms of your youth, not in terms of who you've become in the interim. May still treat you like that kid you were, Rod. How about it?
That's definitely true about my mom and dad, and that's one of the challenges of having to renegotiate the reentry into my hometown, because they have to get used to knowing me as an adult, as a middle-aged adult. But I think that it's worth it. You know, there's a lot of pain there. As I write in the book, my sister Ruthie and I had an enormous amount of friction between us and tension between us because she resented me for leaving. And I'm still dealing today with the fallout from that. As I write in the book, Ruthie's oldest daughter, Hannah, I took her to Paris after her mother died to kind of help her have some fun and to deal with her mother's loss. Hannah revealed to me that I was going to have a difficult time getting close to her younger sisters because their mother had spoken ill of me and my big city ways to them. And that hurt me so much to learn that, but I'm glad I learned the truth. Now that I'm back there, it's rough to try to build this relationship with them, but I'd rather be there trying to do this, trying to work through these things, than having run away.
You know, Garrett writes to us on Facebook there, are you really back, or in this era when you can live in one place but have your working life be all up on the web and you can sort of be everywhere, is it really like just moving back, or are you, you know, sort of physically there but mentally all over? That's certainly more possible these days, Rod.
Oh, and that's, yes, absolutely. And in fact, I wouldn't be able to be back there if not for the internet. I work on the internet. A lot of the things that people leave small towns for, or at least in my generation did, to have better bookstores, to have movies, you can get that stuff online now, and it makes it possible to have an easier life in those terms in a small town. But I really do have to work hard to get off of my computer and get out onto the street and get involved in the community. My wife is much better at this than I am. But you're not really living there if you never leave the house and you're in front of the laptop all day. That's something that I'm working to change. But then again, I've been that way all my life wherever I've lived. Right. It's just been a lot easier to do in a big city.
Let's go to York, Pennsylvania, and Mike. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I actually wanted to touch on what Rod just mentioned. I'm a fairly well-known comic artist, and as I'm listening to you guys, I'm working on a book for a publisher in New York.
Comic as in comic book? Comic book?
Comic books, yeah. Okay. I'm drawing. Right now I have a page in front of me for a Marvel Comics book.
Great.
And I had to discuss something with an artist from Ireland online and my other publisher in France, and I can live in a small town and do all this stuff because of the internet, because of FedEx. So, and I moved back here from, we were originally from New York. My mother moved me here because she wanted to have me grow up in a small town.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, like Rod, I was really eager to get out of here. I wanted to be an artist, so I moved to Philly to study painting. And just sort of at the time felt like I got suckered back into coming home. But now we're raising children here, and I'm also able to work for all these really great publishers all over the world.
That's pretty amazing. So, so you're back. You're in your hometown, but with all those connections, you're in your town. But are you of your hometown, your small town, Mike? Are you really of it, or you're just sort of there?
I think now I am. We have a family now. I have three children, and for the first time, I caught myself going places that although I had grown up here for the most part, I'd never gone to parks. Pennsylvania's, you know, lousy with wonderful parks and places to just play outside.
Yeah.
The irony is, though, that now my oldest is 12, and she's really brainy, and she's studying Chinese, and she's playing around with programming, and we're talking about colleges, and, you know, we have to sort of steer her away from home at this point. So,
yeah.
But it is nice that I'm able to do all this work for all these great publishers from here and not have to move away. I did have one brief flirtation with moving. A video game company asked me out in Seattle to work for them, and I was there for about a week, and I realized at one point that when we were discussing the move that they were having to compete with me being happy, and when I realized that, I realized I wasn't going to be moving to Seattle.
Didn't need to. And if you were to listen to famous comic book artist, if you were to make a comic book set in a small town, then what would you make it these days? Dystopian, utopian? You know, what
you
would?
Know, It's funny you should ask, because I actually did write one. One of my publishers is DC Comics, and they have an imprint called Vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in Manhattan, I had a book signing, and over dinner I was talking to my editor, and we ended up talking about my life, and he says, if you ever want to write that, we will publish it. And unfortunately, they are not putting it out, but the entire book is sort of I think if you're in a small town and you end up writing about it, you can't help but making a book that's sort of a Valentine to the place.
It worked for Superman. And,
if I can jump in there, Tom.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
My book, Little Way of Ruthie Lemming, is a Valentine to St. Francisville. But one thing I keep hearing from readers that they appreciate is it doesn't tie everything up in a sentimental happy ending.
No, it doesn't.
There is pain in going back to these towns, but there's so much deep beauty. I think about the story I tell about the graveyard on Christmas Eve. My sister died in September of 2011, and she and my mom had a tradition for 10 years of putting little votive candles on each grave in the Star Hill Cemetery, about 300 of them. Well, that Christmas, my mom was just too sad and depressed to do it and told me she couldn't make it. And I said, well, I certainly understand that. I drove out by the cemetery after dark, and all the candles were lit, Tom. And I called my mom, and I said, this is great. I'm so glad you rallied. It wasn't her. Turns out it was a neighbor who had been so grateful that my mom and my sister had lit candles on her ancestors' graves, including her stillborn twins, that she wanted to carry that tradition on for them out of love. Now, how do you buy that? You can't buy that anywhere else. It made me love this town so much.
I mean, there's the beauty and the love. What about the pain? Where is the pain? Is it in, history and time also have chains that can come with them?
Yeah, for me, the pain is having to deal with the legacy of the breach between my sister and me and my father and me. You know, I tell a story in the book about a time my wife Julie and I came back from New York City after we were married and made them a bouillabaisse. We asked, can we make you this fish soup? And this is South Louisiana. They like fish. They like garlic and onions. They said, fine. We worked all day on this soup. Then none of them would taste it. And my sister looked at my mom and said, you know, Mom, I ran into Miss So-and-so in town last week. She's a good cook, a good country cook.
That, this is too fancy, bouillabaisse.
Too fancy, exactly. And she saw every little thing like that. She had such a grudge against me. And Southerners, I'll tell you this, we're very good at holding grudges. It's one of our good things that we remember our past. But one of the bad things is we can hold grudges. Ruthie thought I was trying to show off. Yeah. I was trying to do something good for them and share something of my life with them. I'm still having to deal with that now, even though she's been gone for a couple of years.
History may buoy you up in a small town. It can also pull. It can pull down. Steve.
Could I?
Yes, Ken, please. What do you think?
One of the things that demographers are very sensitive to in studying this kind of thing is how, as you change through the life cycle, the attraction or retraction of a given place increases. So.
Yes.
Several of your callers have talked about going back to their small towns when they had children and had families. And that's part of what we see in a lot of the data is that the 18-year-olds can't wait to get out of those towns and go somewhere else and go to college or go to the military. But when they get older, when they start to have children of their own, the appeal of smaller places where they're known, where the community knows them, begins to become a more significant a pull factor to draw them back. And one other point that's interesting in several of your callers is there's a difference between people who have lived in a small town and go away and come back, at least from what people tell me, and how they're treated, as opposed to people who choose to come to these small towns from another place and are treated as outsiders even when they've lived there for 15 years. So the dynamics of the interactions and the history that affect how small town life is differ and differ through the life cycle and for people who are return migrants compared to those who are coming there without prior experience.
So warming your way in can take a long time. Rod?
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I had the great advantage of having been there for five generations, my family. So my family is known. That people may not know me, but they know my mom and dad. They knew my sister.
That's exactly what I hear. Mm-hmm. Is that same thing. They'll say, well, I played on the 68 football team that went to the state finals, and everybody remembers that, even though I've been gone for 25 years, and now I'm coming back.
You know, I have to say, too, though, and I think the demographer can verify this, Louisiana, of all the states, has one of the lowest levels of out-migration. And I think that's because we have such a particular culture down here. And that's one of the attractions that brought me back. As I was raising children of my own outside of Louisiana, I began to think about all the small things about the life down here, the Mardi Gras parades, the community coffee, LSU football. And I realized I wanted my kids to have those memories, too. That was a real revelation to me because I thought I'd put all that behind me.
That's true. There are certainly significant differences in the level of migration to and from states. New Hampshire, where I teach, actually has one of the smallest proportions of its population having been born in the state of any state in the United States. The rural states like Louisiana are places where the proportion of the population who was born in the state and still lives in the state is higher.
Boy, if you could x-ray all the reasons for those inflows and outflows, that would be a shelf of novels in itself. Let me get Steve on here, calling from Canandaigua, New York. Steve, thanks for calling. You're on.
Thanks, Tom. Mm-hmm. You can tell that I'm from Canandaigua because I have an accent. That is to say that I can actually pronounce the word.
Yes, like me stumbling, sorry.
So the radio is the great leveler
in
America these days. But here in upstate New York, in the Finger Lakes area, Canandaigua is a very stable place. It's been about 10,000 for the past 100 years. And it's a place where, except for about 10 years of my life, I've lived out of choice. My family had some background here as well, but I was an outsider, in mm-hmm. a way, to this place because my father had a Polish name, and there weren't too many Polish people who lived here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I chose to come back here because I wanted to work in conservation, and I wanted to write. I wanted to write poetry,
mm-hmm.
and I was a follower of Wendell Berry, who said, what I stand for is what I stand on, and I took that seriously,
mm-hmm.
and about 40 years ago, I returned to this area and got a job with the Soil Conservation Service.
So what's been fulfilling and what's been hard, Steve?
Well, what's hard is, what's fulfilling is you have friends. What's hard is you make enemies. You make enemies, and your family makes enemies. And you make enemies, I assure you, the gentleman been talking about this in rather grandiose terms, you make enemies for generations. You make people who hate you because your grandparents hated one another.
So,
if you want to talk about depth of experience, that's the way it is. You have people who will not talk to you on the street because their grandparents lighted one another, perhaps something like that.
Yeah.
So that's not a southern phenomenon. It's a small town phenomenon, and it's a stability phenomenon. When you have groups of people who have stayed in place for a long time,
a lot comes with it. Hey, Steve, our time is short right here. I want to take that to you, Rob. That sort of, you know, there can be an unbearable lightness of being sometimes if you're too transient and it's too urban. I don't know. But there can be the opposite of that in that small town sometimes, that heaviness that comes with that history.
That's right. And one of the ironies I have to live with, Tom, is knowing that if my sister were still alive, I probably wouldn't be able to live in this town because I couldn't withstand her judgment on me for every little thing, for having moved away, for having been too fancy. Now, God knows I would rather be anywhere else in the world, far away from home, and still have her alive because we did love each other in our difficult way. But I see her, what she opened up to me. She opened the door by the way she died and by the way she lived for me to come home. And I'd really rather have her back, but I can live with the pain and the difficulty of trying to get reintegrated into my hometown because of the things she showed me. And it's just a beautiful, painful, heart-wrenching story, but I feel so very blessed. Like Ruthie always said when I would talk to her and say, I don't know why this has happened to you, she would say, we just don't know what God's going to do with this. Well, God brought me home, I think, through her, and I'm so grateful to her for that, whatever else we might have in our past.
Ken, the great wave is still toward the cities here, but there's all kinds of ways to do it these days. What do you expect over the next, 50 years in terms of small towns? Will we populate them and plugged into the big world from there, or do we continue just to congregate more and more in the big urban areas, Ken?
Well, actually, we're already seeing some deconcentration or spreading out of the American population. The big urban cores are not as big a part of the American population as they were 20 or 30 years ago. So there is spreading out. What I think is going to happen is I think, especially with the baby boom reaching retirement age, is that there's going to be a significant inflow of population into many of these smaller towns that have natural or recreational amenities. And also at the outer edges of the urban areas, as the urban areas sprawl out, you're going to have more small towns beyond the edges of the urban areas, which are linked to the urban areas by the economics. You had some of your callers talking about commuting into the urban areas to work. But on the other hand, they'll be part of the local community as well.
Lots of ways to make community these days. Rod Dreher, in The Little Way of Ruthie Lemming, shows us one very intimate story. And Rod, we're grateful to you for that. And Ken Johnson in Whitewater, Wisconsin, thanks to you both for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.